Hello, everyone, and welcome to another broadcast brought to you by Airs LA, the audio internet rating service of Los Angeles. My name is Nancy Porter, and I will be sharing articles from The Week magazine with you. And The Week is a magazine which publishes condensed versions of news articles from global sources. I'll be reading from the November 28th, 2025 issue of The Week magazine. And we'll begin with articles from the section called Talking Points. Henlett Patel, Why the FBI is Adrift. It's hard to keep track of the FBI director's many embarrassments, said Steve Bannon in MSNOW.com. Kash Patel has made more than a dozen personal trips on his $5,000 an hour government jet, including several visits to see his girlfriend, country musician Alexis Wilkins, in Nashville. During the shutdown, he made taxpayer-funded trips to a Texas hunting operation called the Boondoggle Ranch, and a wrestling event in State College, Pennsylvania, to hear Wilkins sing the national anthem. Meanwhile, he's conducted a brazenly political personal purge of dozens of career FBI agents involved in any past investigation of Donald Trump, or January 6th, or, in one case, for displaying a gay pride flag on his desk. When activist Charlie Kirk was assassinated, said Sadie Gurman in the Wall Street Journal, Patel announced on social media within hours that a subject was in custody. But that was a false alarm. And the real suspect was arrested the next day, in Patel's own words, his nine-month tenure has been effing wild. Even some right-wing media pundits are getting fed up with Patel's antics, said Will Schimmer in The Bulwark. Some are baselessly alleging that Wilkins is a honeypot working for Israel's Mossad intelligence agency. Wilkins, now surrounded by a 24-hour FBI security detail, has not taken it quietly, suing at least three commentators for defamation. Many MAGA supporters see Patel as a failure, said Mark Fisher in the magazine The New Yorker. On social media, they're castigating him for withholding the Epstein files and for failing to indict Democratic elites for the Russiagate hoax, the COVID lab leak, and others of their favorite conspiracies. Patel's most serious failures are quite real, said Garrett Graff in the publication Mother Jones. He has reassigned more than 3,000 FBI agents from duties such as counterterrorism to aiding deportation efforts, a shocking abdication of our nation's security. He has used polygraph tests to enforce political loyalty within the agency, and has alienated scores of career agents. He angered Britain's M15 by breaking a promise to keep an FBI liaison in London who was vital to an intelligence operation regarding China. Now the United Kingdom and the Netherlands have suspended some intelligence sharing with the US because they feel they can't trust us. Patel's farcical reign is no joke. We are less safe as a country when the FBI is distracted. Next article is from the world of healthcare. Headline: Healthcare. Does the GOP have a plan? Republicans won the government shutdown, and Steve T. Dennis said Dennis in the publication Bloomberg. But now they must solve a healthcare mess that risks upending the balance of power in Washington. Enhanced subsidies for people who get their health insurance through the Affordable Care Act's exchanges were the centerpiece of the shutdown fight and are now set to expire at the end of the year. That means some 24 million Americans would see their healthcare premium costs jump 114% on average. If the Republicans do kill the higher subsidies, which the Biden administration provided during COVID in 2021, they would save billions of dollars, but it could carry a heavy political cost ahead of next year's midterm elections. Democrats want to extend the subsidies and are hammering home their message that Trump failed to deliver on his promise to lower the cost of living. Health insurance premiums that double or even triple will only feed Trump's affordability problem. That's why Republicans are fishing for an alternative, said Megan Wilson in the Washington Post. The one many conservative lawmakers seem to prefer is to redistribute some of the Affordable Care Act subsidies into pre-funded health savings accounts. The health saving accounts, or flexible spending accounts, which could help people pay for care out of pocket. But money in those accounts is for medical expenses only and can't be used for monthly insurance premiums. Healthy people may then choose to drop out of the insurance market entirely, leaving insurers with a pool of sick people who have chronic pre-existing conditions. Health economists warn that this could trigger a death spiral in which people who keep their insurance coverage face soaring premiums. It's all part of the Republicans' long-standing plan to destroy the Affordable Care Act, said Heather Digby Parton in the publication Salon.com. Their absurd plans would leave Americans either without insurance or at the mercy of unregulated insurance companies. The reality is that Republicans will never find a healthcare replacement, said Ryan Cooper in the publication The American Prospect. The GOP is wedded to free markets and scornful of the welfare state. But healthcare and health insurance are far too expensive for people to pay for them out of pocket. Regulations and subsidized insurance are necessary to ensure that sick people can afford treatment and surgeries that can cost two or three times their annual incomes. And the Affordable Care Act remains the most palatable option we've got. All right, we move now to the section on technology. Headline: Streaming. Get ready for more blackouts. The 11-day standoff between Disney and Google could change the media language forever, said Lucas Alpert in the publication MarketWatch. The media giant struck a deal recently to finally get its television channels, including ABC, National Geographic, and ESPN, back on Google's YouTube TV screening service, where they had been blacked out since Halloween. Terms of the deal were not publicized, but Disney, which was losing $4 million a day in ad revenue, agreed to make its full lineup of sports available on YouTube TV, a substantial concession. The lengthy stalemate represented a modern twist on an old kind of media fight, and one that's happening more often. Disputes were carriage fees or what distributors have to pay TV companies for the rights to show their programming. They are a holdover from the cable days. But the profit battleground today is streaming. And the streamers appear far more willing to flex their muscles as their command of audiences continues to grow. YouTube TV's market share remains below traditional cable operators like Comcast, Charter, and DirecTV, but is in fact catching up. In the entertainment business, with the eyeballs goes the power. Media companies like Disney have fought back against cord cutting by squeezing existing pay TV customers for more money, said James Ferris in the publication Business Insider. It has created a vicious cycle where fewer people have a pay TV subscription, except for diehard fans of sports or cable news. At some point, pay TV customers will likely balk at how high their monthly bills have gotten. That gives the big streaming platforms an advantage that they can continue to press in future negotiations. This heavyweight battle suggests there will be more such fights between those who make the content and those who control the pipes, said Subject Indap in the publication called Financial Times. Google, a $3.5 trillion behemoth, clearly isn't afraid to stand firm on prices. This is the fourth carriage dispute that YouTube TV has been involved in this year alone. Meanwhile, cord cutters have been forced to shell out ever more for streaming services, said Melissa Korn in the Wall Street Journal. Since 2019, the monthly price of a Disney Plus subscription has gone up 172%, while Apple TV Plus has spiked 160% and Peacock 120%. This streamflation adds up because the average U.S. household pays for about 4.5 streaming services. As practices have risen, so have the workarounds. There are more options to switch to lower cost ad-supported tiers if you're willing to sit through commercials. And some of the streaming companies have started bonding their TV products again. You can buy a combination of Peacock and Apple TV, or one of ESPN and Fox. All the package deals could save you some money, or, just like in the old cable days, leave you paying for content you never watch. All right. Moving to the news section of health and science. Headline: A New Way to Slash Cholesterol. A new experimental pill may offer fresh hope to patients with high cholesterol that doesn't respond to statins alone. In a large trial involving more than 12,000 people across 33 countries, those who took the oral drug enlicitide alongside their standard statin regimen saw a drop of up to 60% in their LDL cholesterol, the bad kind, after 24 weeks compared with those taking their statin and a placebo. Those reductions were sustained for a full year, and rates of side effects were similar to those experienced in the placebo group. Developed by Merck, which plans to seek Food and Drug Administration approval for the treatment next year, Enlicitide is the first oral PCSK9 inhibitor to reach late-stage trials. Like injectable PCSK9 drugs, which are already on the market, the once-daily pill works by helping the body clear the low-density lipoprotein cholesterol from the bloodstream. We know that 70% of patients that are treated with lipid-lowering therapies still don't reach their guideline-directed goals, Merck executive Pungyaraka tells CNN.com. So the idea is really to show what we can achieve with enlicitide on top of statins. Headline: No more warnings on estrogen. Hormone therapies for menopause will no longer carry the Food and Drug Administration's black box warning, the most serious caution on a drug label, about increased risks of breast cancer, heart attack, and stroke, NBCNews.com reports. The agency said last week that the warnings, introduced two decades ago, were based on outdated science, which discouraged many women from using the treatments. Hormone therapy replaces a woman's natural estrogen and progesterone, which decline during menopause. Prescribed in the form of a pill, patches, gel, or cream, it can ease hot flashes, mood swings, vaginal dryness, and bone loss. The black box warning stems from a 2002 clinical trial that was believed to found higher risks among older women. But the trial employed an earlier formulation, no longer widely used, and studies on current therapies do not show the same dangers, especially when the treatment is started before age 60. The Food and Drug Administration Commissioner Marty Makary says the reclassification will stop the fear machine steering women away from this life-saving treatment. All right, let's move on to the business section. News at a glance. Headline: Opioids. Sackler settlement ends bankruptcy saga. A federal bankruptcy court judge recently formally approved OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma's plan to settle thousands of lawsuits over the harms caused by its opioids, said Becky Yerrick in The Wall Street Journal. Purdue's owners, the Sackler family, have denied wrongdoing, but will pay $6.5 billion over time that will be distributed to state and local governments, healthcare providers, and individuals. Purdue itself will contribute another $500 million. It will then cease to exist. Most of its assets will transfer to a new entity, Cronos Pharma, for treatments and medicines to combat the opioid crisis. All right, let's look at the business section called Making Money. Headline: Housing. Trump's 50-year plan for mortgages. It seems like the only way the middle class can get a glimpse of the American dream today is by taking on unmanageable debt, said Susan Temper in the Detroit Free Press newspaper. That was the message sent by the White House recently when President Trump floated the idea of a 50-year fixed mortgage to make homes more affordable. Sure, stretching out mortgage payments an extra two decades from the industry standard 30-year loan would knock down your monthly payments, but only by a smidge. Lawrence Yun, chief economist for the National Association of Realtors, estimates that the monthly payment of a $420,000 loan with 6.3% interest would be just $236 lower with a 50-year mortgage than one on a 30-year mortgage. Those meager savings come with significant trade-offs. Most borrowers, Yun said, would not even begin building meaningful equity until the final decade of the mortgage, when many would be in their 70s or 80s. We've seen this scary move before, said the Wall Street Journal in an editorial. In the run-up, the 2008 housing crisis, the 40-year mortgage was fashionable among unscrupulous lenders, happy to let borrowers take out longer loans than they could otherwise afford. Many wound up walking away from their mortgages when pricing collapsed. The 50-year mortgage was the brainchild of Bill Pulte, head of the Federal Housing Finance Agency, who seems to have sold the president a bill of goods, said Dasha Burns and Sophia Kai in the publication called Politico. Pulte showed Trump a roughly 3x5 foot poster board featuring a graph of former President Franklin Roosevelt below 30-year mortgage and one of Trump below 50-year mortgage. The headline was Great American Presidents. Roughly 10 minutes later, Trump posted the message to Truth Social. I'm a sucker for long duration assets, said Allison Schrager in the publication Bloomberg. And a 30-year mortgage isn't such a terrible idea, and a 50-year mortgage isn't such a terrible idea. At current interest rates, it's almost impossible for first-time buyers to afford loans, but also for existing homeowners with cheap mortgages to move. A longer-term loan with lower monthly payments may be a worthwhile trade-off. Yes, it could mean buyers pay much more in interest, but most people don't pay off their mortgage at maturity. They move or refinance to pay off their loans far sooner. A better idea, said the National Review in an editorial, would be to focus on expanding the supply of housing. State and local lawmakers should remove burdens on construction, such as overly restrictive zoning rules, while the federal government could condition grants to certain reforms. Trump's 50-year mortgage idea is nothing but a Band-Aid. America ought to get busy building. All right, here's a smaller item. What the experts say. Planning early for long-term care. Don't count on Medicare to pay for long-term elder care, said Caitlin Mulher in the publication Money. In an AARP survey, almost half of Americans said they thought Medicare would pay for a nursing home. Unfortunately, that's one of the biggest misunderstandings around long-term care. In fact, it is not covered by Medicare, at least yet. And last year, the median annual cost of an assisted living facility averaged about $70,800, A private nursing home costs an average of $127,280 per year. That's why most long-term care is provided by spouses and children. If you want long-term care insurance, start researching your options in your 50s. For a 60-year-old woman, insurance that covers $163,000 of care costs $3,325 a year, and premiums tend to jump after age 65. Well, let's see where we go next. That will end our coverage of the November 26th issue of The Week magazine. Let's start in now on the December 5th issue. And we'll begin with the editor's letter at the very beginning. President Trump was gifted a get-out-of-jail-free card last year by the Supreme Court. How lovely for him. But as he wields the military and Justice Department as personal tools, his immunity does not protect those who carry out possibly illegal orders. For good reason, service members in the United States Southern Command are reportedly deeply concerned as they assignate more than 80 alleged drug smugglers without congressional authorization or solid legal justification. In fact, NBC News reported recently a senior military lawyer concluded that these extrajudicial executions would be illegal and could expose service members to later prosecution. The military lawyer was overruled by Trump's Justice Department, leaving service members feeling profound legal confusion, said David French in the New York Times. The military is not alone in its legal exposure. Trump will not always be president, and the protection he provides underlings will vanish with the good appliques he affixed to the Oval Office. Attorney General Pam Bondi might give some thought to possible violations of law as she carries on Trump's malicious prosecution of his enemies on the flimsiest of pretense. She faces more peril as she decides whether to release or dispense parts of the Epstein files that would further damage her boss. Homeland Security Secretary Kristen Nielsen and officials at ICE and the Border Patrol may face a reckoning for the arrests and dehumanizing abuse of migrants, legal residents, and even U.S. citizens. By 2028, the list of crimes committed by this administration, including massive corruption and lying in court, will be very long. Trump may not pardon everyone and cannot prevent state prosecutors or civil lawsuits. After Watergate, Richard Nixon was pardoned, but 40 of his aides were indicted or jailed and largely ruined. That was not lawfare. It was justice for serious crimes in the middle of the night. Do Trump's truthful migrants ever worry that just following orders will find as a legal defense? Moving on to the news section titled Main Stories. Headline: Ukraine and Rubio rewrite Russia's peace plan. What happened? After eliminating multiple Russian demands from peace plan backed by President Trump, United States and Ukrainian negotiators agreed recently in Geneva on the framework for a deal to end the Ukraine war. But Russia's acceptance appeared unlikely. The framework is a heavily revised version of the 28-point peace plan that emerged recently from a secret meeting between White House Special Envoy Steve Witkoff, Trump son-in-law Jared Kushner, and Russian negotiator Kirill Dmitriev. The plan set off a firestorm when it was leaked, with Ukrainian and European officials and many U.S. lawmakers criticizing it as a surrender requiring no concessions from Moscow. It would have forced Ukraine to cede not only Russian-occupied regions, but territory it still controls in the Donbas, reduced and capped the use of its military, and barred Ukraine from NATO membership and having NATO peacemakers on its soil. Trump issued an ultimatum for Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky to accept the deal or continue to fight his little hurt out without U.S. support. The ground soon shifted as Secretary of State Marco Rubio met with Ukrainian and European negotiators at Geneva and removed some of the most objectionable points from Russia's plan. Rubio said it was very optimistic about the new 19-point framework, which leaves the final territorial lines open to further negotiations. Zelensky asked to meet directly with Trump as soon as possible to lobby against any land concessions to Russia and finalize the suspended plan. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said any meaningful changes to understanding reached between Putin and Trump would create a fundamentally different situation. What the columnists said. The only explanation for this confusing series of events is that rival factions within the White House fought over the peace plan and made a mess of it, said Nick Coriggio in the publication titled The Dispatch. Witkoff, Kushner, and Dmitriev essentially hunkered a Kremlin Christmas wish list, triggering an uproar. Rubio then told a bipartisan group of senators that the 28-point plan came from Russia and was not the United States proposal. The Secretary of State worked with Ukrainian and European envoys to shape a proposal that a relieved Zelensky is now endorsing while Moscow scowls. The initial plan realized Ukraine's worst fears, said Andrew McCarthy in the National Review. Once again, Trump was doing Russia's bidding, which became all the more obvious when he issued his stark ultimatum to Zelensky. Rubio was the game changer, said Jack Blanchard and Dasha Burns in the publication Politico. When the White House cast the proposal as a fait accompli, he shifted the narrative, insisting Ukraine deserved a say. The longtime Russia hawk then forged a Ukraine-friendly peace proposal in Geneva that he's touting as the best we have had on our entire months of working on these issues. Clearly, this ultra-positive message was aimed at a certain audience of one. Zelensky handled Trump shrewdly, showing he's learned, foolishly sparring with him in the Oval Office in February, said the Washington Post in an editorial. Faced with the disastrous Russian plan, Trump adapted. He remained calm and offered to negotiate. But the likely outcome of any plan that declares Putin's main goals is that Russia will fight on no matter the human cost. Trump and Putin hoped that a weakened Zelensky would have to swallow a bad deal, said Yaroslav Trofimov in the Wall Street Journal. Rocked by a corruption scandal that has consumed the ministers and sparked fury across Ukraine, he is on shakier ground politically than at any point during the four-year war. But many Ukrainians view as existential. Despite brutal losses, they are in no mood to surrender. Nor is Putin about to bend, said Paul Simon in the New York Times. He would gladly have taken as a win a Kremlin-friendly peace plan that enshrines Ukraine's perpetual subordination. But he'll also see a faded process as a victory as it leads Trump to pull remaining support from Ukraine. With his economy struggling and his troops moved in a slow advance, there's had a sweeping cost to lives and material. Putin's capacity for continued war isn't limitless, but he believes time is on his side, and his goal hasn't shifted. He wants to break Ukraine. And we will be stopping there with our coverage of the week. I need to remind you again that you have been listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Materials or items read on Airs Allais are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Again, I'm Nancy Porter, and it's my pleasure to share The Week magazine with you.